Hey there, thanks for coming. Take a seat.
It's time to retire to the drawing room.
Where are the women? This is the question that economists and policymakers around the world need to be asking if they're to adapt to the challenges ahead, according to my next two guests. Narelle Hooper and Roden Jenoff are the authors of New Women, New Men, New Economy. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having us on, Patricia. It's a lot of news.
It is. Narelle, I'll start with you. Why is this a pressing question?
It's a pressing question because we're not making the most of the human capital we have available for our social and economic purposes. And in this kind of world where we're all being urged to be agile and innovate and be more innovative, that's actually a really pressing matter. A lot of people talk about the technology being important in innovation and so forth, but the human capital's important. And the networked economy, the networked world is just a perfect environment for women. We just need to let them out and get them active and press them into service as leaders in politics, in business and in society, 50-50.
I'll ask you, Roden, maybe you can handle this question. Where are the women?
Well, the interesting thing is we're in that amazing space of transition, and what we're seeing is that women are in that space. And what the data is telling us, where we have 50-50 teams and we're mixing it up, those organisations and companies are doing really, really well. I mean, let's just have a look at some interesting data from the London Business School. They say that when we get 50-50 women, psychological safety is optimised, creativity is optimised. And what we find there is that it is these spaces that are really driving performance. And this is why we say in our book, the commercial imperative is really clear and the market's choosing for us, whether it's companies, communities and countries, those that are more inclusive, they're doing better, they're more innovative and they really do prosper in the long term.
And we often don't think about, we've actually got a societal construct that is a male construct, and it was designed, the institutions, our whole thinking about leadership styles and so forth, were designed in an era where men were running the show. So even our mental, unconscious mental image of what a leader looks like is actually male for many people. And so women just don't get the chance very often that they ought to. Their voices aren't heard as much. We don't see them in history. But when you do give them a chance, they run the show actually, well, in many ways, a hell of a lot better. Organisations are more productive, they're more innovative, they're more financially stronger. There are things that we lack. So there's less fraud, there's less conflict. And in organisations, there's less employee turnover because it's a mix of leadership styles and perspectives that settles things down a lot.
Let's get back into some of the things that you discuss in your book. Describe the essential differences between old and new power. What does that actually mean?
The old power is something that's jealously guarded. It's the old boys network, and they're completely closed to new ideas. And new power is about open thinking and open mindsets. It really flows like a currency, and it's this open mindset which is defining the new economy. And that's what's exciting about the new part of it, because if we're talking about the Australia being agile, about being innovative, it is about being open to these new ideas.
So who's winning that battle between old and new? I mean, you've just said effectively we're in transition between the two. How are we transitioning?
It's a tussle. And it's going to take each of us to use our own agency and our voices to actually, it's not an automatic given that we transition to the new, because old doesn't like to let go. And can I also say that old, you don't have to be an old person to be an old style leader. We have some young people who are kind of a certain way, and we have lots of wisdom and a very open and collaborative approaches by some of our older leaders. And in reality, these kind of characteristics of openness and so forth and the more directive command and control approach exist in each of us at different times. So you can identify some across the kind of political and business landscape. A lot of people talk about the huge boost that Canada's got out of having Justin Trudeau as leader, where he appointed 50-50 of his cabinet women. He expressly values diversity of thinking as a strength and says what a leader looks like these days is someone who can harness those different perspectives, not just male, female, but old, young. Racial diversity is really critical. There's some really valuable research now from McKinsey & Co. that shows organisations that have racial diversity actually perform even better than those that have focus on the gender diversity. So there's a lot of talent locked up there that we haven't let loose. When we sat down to write the book, this notion of new is actually men and women stepping up to work together as equals. Given our levels of education of young women and the opportunities and so forth, it's the first time in history we actually have this capacity.
2 years since the G20 gathering declared that women were the key to economic growth, I remember that. It was a really big statement and moment. Where basically the logic was that the policy settings needed to change fundamentally to unlock the value of women, that women were basically being underused and that it was fundamentally affecting productivity. What has been the progress? What's changed?
I think there's a very exciting moment. I mean, we've got 1,000 CEOs from the world's top companies saying yes to diversity, and they're actually doing it. We have the male champions of change, over 100 CEOs in Australia employing over 600,000 people. You know, some of those include the Army, the Australian Stock Exchange, Qantas, Telstra. This is an extraordinary moment in time, and there are other countries that we have so much to learn from. I've been fortunate enough over the past decade to be working in Scandinavia, and there that country has a fantastic gender and innovation program. It's at the heart of their government policy, and they're rolling it out across industries like forestry, advanced manufacturing, and energy. These are the sorts of examples that we can draw on and really inspire us, because the data is showing from Sweden, mix it up, companies are twice as innovative, twice as profitable, and that's where we need to be.
In Sweden, they actually have a gender lab, and they roll their innovation program through that. One of the very vivid images that we came up with in the course of our research was a very fine picture of a strapping Swede from the Vinnova, the innovation agency, he was a tradie, and he's dressed in a kilt. And the importance of that was that the agency felt that it's really important to shake up the role models, because having role models so that people can see different ways of doing things is quite important. This was done as a gimmick at the time, a bit of marketing. Now, this kilt sold its head off in Scotland. And I reckon there might be a bit of a niche in Australia, because it's very cool in summer. It's very practical, hard wearing.
I love this. Narelle's selling the kilt. You're listening to RN Drive. You're in the drawing room. And my guest, Narelle Hooper, who has revealed how much she loves the kilt, journalist and the co-author of New Women, New Men, New Economy, and her co-author, Roden Jenoff. So let's get back to where we're doing this well in Australia, because we have many companies, small and big. Are there some industries or some places where we're seeing this new kind of leader that you talk about, this new way, being embraced more than others?
There's some great examples, and then there's some organisations that have to just get their act together and do better because they're not doing enough for shareholders. A great example is Northparkes Mine in New South Wales. It's a gold and copper mine. It's run by a woman named Stephanie Loder, who's worked with Rio Tinto for years. She and her husband share the care of their children. He's got a big job too. In that role in the community, they're reaching out in the community, getting much more involved in the community, social events, and supporting a pipeline of women and Indigenous men and women coming through into the companies and apprenticeship. Because the nature of work's changing now, they're also experimenting with how they break up the roles and they job share, quite critical roles as well, so it's not just on the periphery in admin as it might have been. So that's one example.
I think there's lots of other examples and case studies. I mean, our book is packed with case studies. The really interesting thing about our book is that we talk about the drivers of the new economy, and that's around creativeness and that ability to be experimental and open, and the importance of diversity and equity, because if you don't have fair organisations, well, you can't unlock that potential. And what we found in our book is that even in traditional manufacturing companies like Precise Manufacturing in South Australia, Grant Tinney, the CEO of that company, had a traditional tooling company that was reliant on Holdens, and he opened up his thinking to new potential. That company now has got an R&D lab. It's collaborating with the university. It's opened up a new office in the United States, and it's making medical equipment.
Atlassian's another great example. And they're a great example of how it doesn't, these things just don't happen on their own. We've actually got to do some engineering around it through the systems and the way people communicate their behaviours and stuff. So Atlassian have got, they allocate 1% of equity, project time and so forth to the community. They now have a program to bring men and women and a whole bunch of different people in through traineeship programs and so forth. We're seeing it through the likes of organisations like such as Telstra. Qantas is now driving this through its supplier network. Mm. We mentioned the Champions of Change program. These are organisations whose CEOs have actually, they recognise it doesn't happen. We've been preaching for years about women just trying to, you know, get work hard and get to the top and your merit will shine through. Well, we know that doesn't always happen because merit's not a fixed concept. They realise now they've actually got to actively build the pipeline, promote more women and actually allow men to step up and act as carers as well, making it okay for men to work part-time and be seen to be caring for their kids at the park and so forth during the week. That's really important aspect too.
And it's the culture of these companies about how they're employing, because they're looking at the values, and part of those values can't be manufactured. Take Atlassian, for example, that Narelle spoke about. They're hiring on the ability to collaborate. They're looking at how other people treat other people, and it's this gives them an indication of how they'll work in teams in order to be able to mix it up and to unlock the potential not only of their own expertise but also of the expertise of the people around them.
Increasingly, if you're not doing it these days, people are going to walk. The millennial generation, everyone bangs on about them, but this is how they like to work, and they there's a stiff competition to actually get those in the door and keep them in the organisation. So,
is this what you mean when you talk about the new economy code in your book? What is that code?
They're the four elements that you've got to view your organisation, your leadership approach, the four dimensions that you need to have in your organisation. So you need to create an environment. And creativity is the thing that actually sparks the ideas and knowledge in the new economy. So you've got to have that. That used to be something special people have, and I wasn't very creative, but you can do some stuff. It's a team sport. Open.
And you can learn about creativeness. It's not the marketing department and the gurus and the geniuses.
No, it's all of us.
You know, it's about, you know, all of us and that we can learn this. And that's why, in fact, we call it a team sport in the book.
And there's no place to hide. So you know how quickly word gets out if something's going to shame your company. So you've got to actually speed up the flow of information and be as transparent as you can. Diversity boosts performance and problem solving, but we're not letting all the diverse voices through in the organisation. So you actually need some special leadership skills around that for that to happen. And then the fairness thing, the reason we often don't see a lot of women in some of these organisations is underneath, they're not actually being fair to their employees, their customers and the community. They think they are, but it's an old approach.
How are they being unfair?
Oh, well, who's the loudest voice in the meeting? You know, the crazy goth down at the lab, whose voice doesn't get heard because they're that eccentric person? Who's the person they think should march out the door when they turn 55 or 60 because they're being viewed as too old, when in fact we can't just have young people in organisations. We need that wisdom to actually get so we don't wrong-foot ourselves.
And it's
for starters.
And it's so important in an organisation. When you look at the training budget, who gets the training budget? It's usually the blokes, because they're the ones who are going to get promoted. And
that was a great example. So in South Australia, where we did some work with the government, they found that 3/4 of the training budget actually went to men.
They were only training the men.
Largely training the men would be a better way to put it. And when in fact their organisation was had sort of 63% women. So it's these.
And that's not uncommon.
No, and this is where you've got to just go back and look at your data, because we all think we're being fair. No one wants to be unfair. But when you go back and look at the data, you see who gets the tap on the shoulder, who gets the special opportunity. And we're just now realising how very often those voices aren't heard. And great example of a guy that we interviewed for the book. He's a Taiwanese Australian, and his boss, he said, "Jeffrey, mate, we want you to, you know, do better. Can you be more Australian?" And what he meant was, can you come down the pub with us and hang out? And Jeffrey was a guy who liked basketball and quiet nights. He wasn't a pub type. now that boss has moved on. So Jeffrey's now got a new boss who's a Greek-Australian woman who just happens to have a real knack of actually, she hangs around with all these kind of different people. Their performance is really improving.
Oh, those Greek-Australian women.
You can always rely on the Greek-Australians. But we saw this the other night with a group of people who were talking about the huge opportunities in the Middle East that we're not taking advantage of because we've got a particular mindset about this.
Well, I've found this a very fascinating conversation. Thank you to both of you for joining me.
Thanks so much, Patricia.
And that's Rodan Genoff. He's the Managing Director of his own company. He calls himself a bit of an industry cluster expert and the co-author of New Women, New Men, New Economy, and Narelle Hooper also. And Narelle and Rodan will be speaking at the All About Women panel at the Sydney Opera House on March the 6th.